Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Of course, it is me, Jonathan, one of the hosts. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie.
Hey up, everyone.
So, yeah, on this episode, we will be taking a look at the 2000 satirical horror film, American Psycho, directed by Mary Harron.
Hello. Pat Bateman. You want some money? Some food?
Oh, thank you, mister. Thank you.
It's... You know what a fucking loser you are?
What?
New card. What do you think?
Oh, very nice.
There's something sweet about you.
I like to dissect girls. Did you know I'm utterly insane? So, wasn't Rothschild originally handling the Fisher account? How'd you get it?
Well, I could tell you that, but then I'd have to kill you.
So what do you do?
I'm into, murders and executions mostly.
Do you like it?
Well, it depends. Why?
I
just have to kill a lot of people.
So yeah, there we go. We have finally came around to a biggie, I think, for this kind of generation, which is kind of weird. This character's making a comeback. I don't know if I like it. Because he's a Sigma personality.
I mean, yeah, we'll get into that more as we
get into that. Will we get into that? Will we?
Yeah, we will, definitely.
Are you sure? Yeah.
Part of the legacy, really.
Fucking shite legacy as well. That's the worst of it. Yeah. This is probably the first film that I... See, Christian Bale's a weird guy in terms of an actor. Because for a lot of people, this could have been the first time that he kind of came to prominence. But he was in loads of shit as a child and stuff, and I'm pretty sure he was a voice actor in Pocahontas and stuff like that in the mid-90s.
He was not very known by this time.
No?
No, and they struggled to get this role. This film has a weird history in about getting made. Because, of course, the director, was it Mary Harron?
Harron, yeah.
She wanted to do it, and she was originally attached to do it, and she was seeing people for it, and saw Christian Bale, and instantly wanted Christian Bale to do it. She really liked Christian Bale. She wanted Christian Bale. However, whoever was in charge, the executives or whatnot, weren't really convinced about Christian Bale. He was a nobody at the time, and they were like, oh, we don't really want him. Get someone like DiCaprio. In fact, DiCaprio did get attached to this film. It was meant to be DiCaprio. Mary Harron was not happy with this. She ended up leaving over that. So the film actually was going to be a higher budget film.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that.
She left or was dismissed from the project, she was replaced by Oliver Stone.
Yeah, she either left or was dismissed because she couldn't get Christian Bale, because she really wanted to do it with Christian Bale. So Oliver Stone came in, but I guess that must have fell through. Something went wrong there or whatnot. They wanted DiCaprio. DiCaprio dropped out. I'm pretty sure they were looking at, like, who was it? Was it like Ewan McGregor? Oh, I can't remember. Someone. I'm going to say it's Ewan McGregor. I'm not entirely sure if it was. But it was someone, and I'm pretty sure that Christian Bale asked this person to not take the role because he wanted to do it. and they didn't take their own. I'm pretty sure, I think it was Ewan McGregor. I'm going to have to look that up again, but all I know is there was another actor that was wanted for the role, and he asked them not to take it, so he didn't take it.
Well, I mean, obviously the film's based on the 1991 novel of the same name by Bret Easton Ellis. He thought that this would have been unadaptable due to its violent nature, but in 1992, the rights to the film were bought by Edward R. Pressman, who was determined to adapt it.
Yes.
I mean,
took a while.
Filmmakers like David Cronenberg were attached, or, well, not attached, but considered to direct the film before before Harron and Turner began writing a screenplay in 1996. It's a bit of a strange one, because Brad Pitt was attached to the film for a while.
Brad initially. Pitt as well?
Like, in early development, yeah. Like, David Cronenberg and Brad Pitt, I mean, a director and actor to take the role, Johnny Depp. I mean, there's loads of names, like, just flying about. Yeah. Because apparently Johnny Depp expressed interest to Pressman when he bought the film rights.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy, like, it is one of these films where you just think, wow. I'm quite surprised it actually got made, in all honesty.
Honestly, I agree. Because it seemed like everything was falling through, really. And then, I don't know what happened that brought Mary back. Well, obviously, someone decided that Christian Bale would be fine. And then Mary Harron got reattached to the role. And I don't know what happened to Oliver Stone, where he went. So that got back, and she got to make the film that she wanted to make.
I mean, it went through loads of it, because she developed most of it. And then we got to the pre-production stage, and, like, no actors were signed on. And like, Willem Dafoe and Jared Leto had expressed interest in joining. Harron suggested that the slim Bale go to the gym, since Bateman frequently exercised, so there was that. Apparently Bale totally transformed himself, which we now know was what he'd kind of part of his acting style. But he obviously was relatively unknown, like you said. He was only 13 in his most famous role to date, in Steven Spielberg's Empire of the Sun, which came out in 1987. Lionsgate didn't want to cast him and pushed for a kind of more famous star like an Edward Norton or a Leonardo DiCaprio. Lionsgate were willing to pay $20 million to cast DiCaprio, even keeping the budget at $6 million, but paying him his salary.
Why?
Because he was considered to be the biggest star in the world at the time.
Just that big that, be so wrong with him in the role.
Mary Harron was so opposed to it. I mean, we eventually get followed down. And then Pressman wanted Harron to stay, but she basically says, I'm not making it without Christian Bale. So that's how that happened. And then DiCaprio then said he wanted to work with a major director and had drafted a short list of names that included Danny Boyle, Stanley Kubrick, and Martin Scorsese. Oliver Stone was hired to direct, and after a reading with DiCaprio, Leto and Cameron Diaz, who I don't know why she was reading, she's not in the film, they began reworking the script. Stone and DiCaprio wanted to take the film in a more psychological direction in contrast to Harron's satire, and turn it into a Jekyll and Hyde-like story. Lots of creative differences, yeah. Fucking, what a weird production.
It's crazy. How it got made,
apparently,
I don't know.
Apparently Christian Bale was so confident that DiCaprio would depart the film that he turned down other roles for 9 months and continued to prepare for this role.
I think...
Both him and Mary understand. If you've got a filmmaker that wants to make the film and you want them to make the film. And they want an actor who's dedicated to be the star. Why don't you just let them do it?
Like, I think they were both dedicated to do this. I think they really wanted this film to get made. And yeah.
Eventually what had happened is, I think, time. You're looking at, like, the book came out in 91. The rights were bought a year later. By the mid-90s, it was being developed with Mary Harron involved, and she was writing a screenplay. I mean, the film doesn't come out until 2000, so there's like all of that shit takes place. I mean, what happened with DiCaprio is he actually departed the project because he went to work with Danny Boyle in the film The Beach, which came out in 2000 also. Because DiCaprio left, Oliver Stone left. It's fucked up. Then Lionsgate rehired Mary Harron, but was still against casting Bale as the lead role. Then Lionsgate offered the role to Ewan McGregor.
Yes, there you go. That was right.
Who turned it down after Bale personally urged him to do so.
And yet.
Harron spoke with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Edward Norton, and Vince Vaughn.
Fucking hell.
But after they all declined, don't know how they done that, Lionsgate begrudgingly agreed to hire Bale with a salary of $50,000.
Jesus! Fuck, that's a straight up fuck you to your face, man. Like, oh, what arseholes.
The Lionsgate then also mandated that the budget did not exceed $10 million, and that recognisable actors would fill out the supporting roles. By that point, Willem Dafoe, Jared Leto, Reese Witherspoon, and Chloe, I can't say her last name. How would you say her last name?
Chloe...
Seveny.
Oh my God.
Seveny. You don't say the G. I knew something was silent. It's Chloe Seveny. Seveny.
Right.
They were all committed. Harron and Bale unsuccessfully tried to convince Winona Ryder to play the role of Evelyn Williams also. Anyway, then we get to the film's back on track, and the people involved in it are the people who we see on screen.
Yes, and the film actually gets made.
What a fucked up fucking, like, pre-production journey. Process to go through.
It's insane. But I'm so glad that this did happen, because I absolutely love this film.
I think it's one of those weird things in the film industry. It just baffles my brain, and that's why, like, as somebody who would like to make films in the future, I don't ever want to work with production companies that don't want to back you.
Yeah.
Like, if they back you as a filmmaker, and then you're putting your nuts on the table for an actor who you think's perfect for the role, how, like, I don't understand them getting involved with that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they've hired you because they want you, and so why don't they just let you make the casting choices, you know? It's a bit strange.
Like, I don't know. Like, you'd think that they saw that Christian Bale was, like, so dedicated to this role, and it was like, nah. They're just like, nope. But he did get it in the end.
Filming eventually got underway in February 28th, 1999, and only lasted 7 weeks. Shot in 7 weeks.
That's quick.
For a budget of $7 million.
One million more than The Usual Suspects.
Bearing in mind that Christian Bale only got $50,000 for the film.
That is kind of shocking. I'm not going to lie, man. Like, I'm glad he just done it because he wanted to do the role, but fuck, that's just such, like, Jesus Christ. Like, that can't even have been, like, well, for 7 weeks, it's not really fully worth
it. 7 weeks. Like, I suppose if you've got your script and everything's ready and you're just rolling cameras, I thought 7 weeks you could shoot. I mean,
but for like a 9 month wait,
what do you mean?
Like, was it 90 for, like, he turned down roles for like 9 months? Didn't you say?
He turned down roles for 9 months and kept getting into the condition to play Patrick Bateman.
It's crazy, but it does create one of the best portrayals of a character in the film. I think this is easily Christian Bale's best performance, and I don't even think it's really close to it for me.
I think there's people that might argue against that.
Probably. Well, if someone says Bruce Wayne or Batman to me, I'm gonna slap them. But he's definitely got other good roles. But I just think this one is insane. I think it really transforms him. I know that's what he does, but like in every other film I've seen, you know, that's Christian Bale. I don't recognize him at all in this film. I think the one thing, especially, is I think this is his best accent he's ever done. I think everything Christian Bale does in an American accent, you can always kind of hear Christian Bale through it. I do not recognize his voice at all in this role. It sounds so different, and it's so weird.
It's a satire, though. It's like he's putting on like a. It's not. In every other film, he's having to play like a serious version of a character. Whereas in this, he's playing like a. Like it's just a comedic kind of satirical take on a character.
I still think it's better than.
I don't know. Like I like him in other things as well. I wouldn't say that this is hands down his best role of his whole career. I mean, it's up there. Like, well, whether we, one of his most iconic ones, but. Andre Sekula was the cinematographer on this, who had previously worked with Tarantino on Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Interesting. The film does have a kind of distinct look to it.
It's set in the 80s, and it's very 80s.
It looks... I don't even know how to describe the look of this film. It just... almost bland at times, but that's kind of the point. It's not
the whole point of the film. Yeah.
It's kind of this weird colour to it, It's a crazy film. Like, if you watch, like, the start of this film, I think this film starts really well. I think it's probably one of the strongest things about it. Because I think it starts, with them at dinner, when they all throw, like, their credit cards into, the dish.
And it shows
you all the kind of yuppie people together. And they're always talking about Paul Allen, most of the film. They're like, is that Paul Allen? No, that's not Paul Allen, that's Paul Allen. Nobody knows, that's the funniest thing about this film, nobody knows who anyone is in this film. They all just think they're each other because they're pretty much all the fucking same person. So they literally can't tell anyone apart. Patrick Bateman gets, the main character, gets mistaken for so many people. No one thinks he's Patrick Bateman most of the time. Like, they think he's Paul Allen sometimes, I think he's someone else. Paul Allen himself thought he was someone else. I can't remember, but yeah. It's a kind of big thing of the film. But the film seems like...
There's actually a thing about that that we'll probably touch upon later.
Yeah. But like the start of the film is just so good, because you see this kind of... all these yuppies talking together, and out of all of them, Patrick Bateman seems like the least bad about them. He just kind of seems... The other one seemed pretty bad. He doesn't seem great, but he doesn't seem as bad. But then it goes to him buying a drink, and that's when you get the first little bit of the whoa, what the fuck? When she says he can't spend a certain thing, and she turns around and he goes, "You're a fucking ugly bitch. I want to stab you to death and play with your blood." And it's like, whoa, okay, and that's the film we're watching. And then we go into
it's shot in a way where it's his reflection in a mirror.
Yes.
Which is why we'll go deeper into this and more talk about the film, is why people have got such a divided opinion of, is this film real or not?
Yes, I know.
There's other parts to that as well. Obviously, in literature, I'm guessing you probably can reference things like designers or, I don't know, what kind of... I'm guessing in a book you need to be super descriptive of what characters are maybe wearing. Apparently, Rolex made...
Yeah, Rolex got really angry about it, yeah.
Made Haran change the novel's
hand
line,
off the
don't
Rolex.
Touch the Rolex, they don't touch the watch.
Yep.
And Cerruti, 1881, disallowed Bale from wearing its clothes during the murder scenes.
Yep.
But I mean, it's just like fine. This. So they had to work with European companies for clothes and cosmetics because American companies didn't want to be associated with the film.
Which is not
like a massive deal, like, but it's just it's a bit strange.
Companies are like that, man.
Yeah,
it's so stupid. One thing I've never understood about a lot of companies is like car companies. Like, think about all the cars that get like blown up in films, right? And it's like, so they're fine with seeing their cars being used in films, they get destroyed. But then, like, say for instance, when they license their cars off into like video games, it's no, we don't want to have any physical damage done to the car in the games. You're not, and so the games are not allowed to cause anything. So like games like Forza and stuff like that, where they were using licensed cars, only like scratches to like the paint and stuff like that is the only damage you can actually take to the car. You actually can't take any physical damage, which is such a stupid thing. Companies are really weird with certain things. It's like, oh, it's bad publicity, but no one really cares. It's a film, but that's just what they're like. And you know, how did they figure out about the hands off the Rolex thing? Did they have to come to Rolex to say that line? Or was it because they somehow must have heard of it to say that now?
Yeah, but I'm thinking about my thing is in literature, like written in a book, is it allowed? But I mean, on screen where millions of people are going to see it, because you've got to think that more people have seen this film than have read the book easily.
Yeah,
and they probably didn't want to be associated with that style of
film
person, that culture. I mean.
Yeah, I don't know, but when was the first thing you watched this?
I watched this film probably when I was about 15, I think. So that was what?
A while back.
19 years ago.
I'm not even sure the first time I watched it. In fact, I don't even think I watched
this. 2004, that. Like, I mean, you've got... That's a weird thing. Like, I watched a lot of weird films because my mum was a film media student, like, in the 90s. So she obviously watched films, and, like, I watched a lot of weird shit when I was younger. Like, I mean, folk probably wouldn't seek out. I mean, the whole thing that we'll talk about later with the Sigma personality has only really became a recent kind of internet fucking... culture. It wasn't a thing when I was younger. There wasn't that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, there's been a whole kind of thing about these character types, you know, these characters from films being this persona, but when I was younger, you just watched the film for what it was, and it's only in retrospect that this kind of stuff's happening. Apparently, Josh Lucas said to Bale that the other actors thought he was the worst actor they'd ever seen.
Yes, this is very true.
And didn't understand why Mary Harron actually fought for him.
This is 100%. No one liked him no one thought he was a good actor on set. But then they also didn't realise that he wasn't American. Because for the whole time on set and during the film, he spoke with an American accent. And once they got to the press release... he was English, and they thought that he was putting on an accent for another film. It's actually not; it was the opposite. He was just not; he was using his normal accent and not putting on the American one. I don't know why Christian Bale was getting so much shit from like everyone at this fucking place. It's crazy. Why did they think he was so bad? I think his performance is so good in this film. They're just weird. I don't even know, but. I'm just glad that he actually did get to make the film, because I do really think it's a great film.
No, like, I can see why people would have the opinion that it's, like, his best part and stuff. It's just... I mean, am I ever going to read this book? I don't know. I've got 2 credits in Audible. I might actually get this and listen to it. I don't read or listen to shit, so...
Something shocked me about
it. It's quite weird, though. Like, before you go... Just reading here that apparently Harron and Turner kept most of the violent off screen. How? Is this book like a million times more violent than this film?
This is what I was literally just about to say.
I'm like, what the fuck, man? This film's like ridiculously violent.
This film's quite violent, but the book is extremely violent. And get this, the author of the book complained about the film being too violent.
Wow.
Yep.
That's strange.
I have no idea, because the book is way... I remember watching a video about it like years ago, and yeah, apparently the book is way more violent than what the film is. The film actually isn't that... Like, it has quite violent scenes in it, but it isn't that violent. All violence is absolutely kept off-screen. Like, the axe scene is off-screen. All you see is a bit of spray blood to the face. The chainsaw drop, off-screen. There's a few stabs, like a couple maybe shots, headshots. But
no, I get what you're saying. It's not like totally like super violent, but
yes,
it's more the sort of scenes before and after. Like it gives you everything you need to sort of put the pieces together without showing you it. But it's still quite a violent film.
Yes.
Whether it's off screen violence or not, it's still a really violent film. It's not just that it's really violent. I mean there's a reason why this film's I'm gonna hit stab and say this is an 18 in the UK.
It is.
I would assume so.
Mainly, yeah, the violence, the kind of subject matter really, especially.
Subject matter, nudity.
Yeah, a lot of things. Is there drug use? I don't know.
But not the kind of drugs you would associate with that type of person, I suppose.
Yeah.
He reading about this film, he just seemed like so engrossed with the character and wanted to do everything.
It's because he was Patrick Bateman, he wasn't acting. No, I'm joking.
You never know. Like, because they had like the threesome scene, and he was like, nah, fuck it, not got a problem being nude. But I'm guessing if you spend a year getting into that kind of shape, does it really matter if you're running?
He looks good in this film, he does.
That's the thing. But he wore sneakers and covered his penis with a sock. this film's fucking weird.
Very weird. Like I said, it is a satire. I originally thought this film was like a kind of more of a horror, but I mean, it somewhat is kind of seen that way. But yeah, it's a very funny film. It's not like laugh out loud, but I do find the film quite funny. Which I think that's one thing that Mary Harron and Christian Bale got along with. Really, they both had a really kind of sick sense of humour, and they got on really well. And that kind of shows in the film. The film's really it's got this humour to it. And of course, it is a satire. I just quite like it. I do find the film quite funny at times. Like, certain scenes are just done so well, and I think my favourite one's got to be the cards, when they're all showing their little cards.
The business cards, yeah.
Business cards, and they all look the exact fucking same. But it's like, nah, it's like this one. It's like, oh, that's very nice. That's bone. And it's a Sicilian braille that's on that. And then they pull out Paul Allen's, and he's like, oh my god. The fuck, I can't remember what he says, but it's insane. And it's like, what? It looks exact same. It's such a good film for like stuff like that. So many different. The dialogue in this film is so memorable. Nearly everything that Patrick Bateman says is quotable for some reason. It's one of the most quotable films I know, especially nowadays. So many people quote this film that I know. There's so many lines, and you wouldn't even be surprised which ones my friends are quoting sometimes. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know what the most famous quote is from this film, but I know for a while, you know Huey Lewis in the News was a big one. Hip to be square, that's a big scene. Patrick Bateman's monologue in general is just known as quite a famous part of the film, it's not what the film opens up with.
He's got two monologues, though.
He's got two monologues, yes.
He's got the one where he's... Well, I mean, it's not the opening scene, but it's just after when he's
just
like doing his routine.
That's
like a monologue about who he is.
Which was parodied by Margot Robbie for something, I can't remember what.
And then he's got his monologue at the end of the film.
Yes. And there's so many like good lines in those monologues as well that even my friends quote, which is surprising. I don't usually hear people quote from monologues. But a lot, but they do this film, and certain ones where he's like, I am simply, all they say, although you can shake my hand, You can feel skin and bone. I can't remember exactly, but it's like skin and bone. He's like, I'm simply not there.
Yeah.
I need to return some videotapes. Another banger line that he says multiple times in the film. Try getting a reservation now at Dorothy's now, motherfucker. What he says when he kills Paul Allen.
Yeah, I mean, there is quotable. Yeah, I mean, it's great. It just happens when you've got people attached to the film that genuinely want to make the film. And this is like thinking about the way directors work with actors, right? So Willem Dafoe turns up about, what, halfway through the film or so?
Maybe a little bit earlier. Kimball,
the police detective.
Yes.
But while shooting the scenes, Haran specifically requested them to act differently on
three
each
different
of them.
Times. Yes.
So as one scene he acted as if he knew Bateman was a killer. The second time he only suspected him, and the third time did not suspect a thing. And then during post they blended it to confuse the audience.
Yeah.
That works.
Works really well.
But it also kind of puts Patrick Bateman in this kind of unsettled state of mind as well. Because although, like, this is another thing about the film, he confesses to his own lawyer who doesn't believe him.
Yep. He doesn't believe him because he said, I saw Paul Allen. And now he could have saw Paul Allen and Patrick Bateman's making it all up. Or he saw someone that he... Or he saw,
well, because
he thought
they're,
he saw
all,
Paul
they're
Allen.
All like fucking carbon copies of each other in a weird way.
Yeah.
When you look at it, like seven weeks, you know, scenes will take time. You know, you have ones like apparently. I don't know why you would reshoot this take, but the shot where he peels off his facial mask was just done in a one take done situation. But unless you fuck that up, I mean, I don't know why you would take more than one.
I mean, it just looked really good in that first take. Really, I think it just. Yeah. It looks insane, like he's shedding his skin.
It's
done really well. I'm just thinking of other lines now because I'm fucking... It's funny how memed this film is now in today's kind of online culture. It's crazy. But the film's been popular for probably since it came out, I guess. I don't know, like, I mean, it was somewhat successful when it originally came out. What was it? 37 million it made. Was it 36? It was around about that, wasn't it? It was in the 30s. I think it made profit wise, which is not like a huge amount, but it's still
34.3 million off a $7 million budget.
I mean, that's still a good profit. It's not like the hugest one you've ever heard, but for a film like that, it's pretty good. Especially with not too many like big stars attached to it. Like Christian Bale was pretty not known. Of course, Willem Dafoe was known. Jared Leto would have been, but apart from them, it's not like too many big kind of stars, and it is a bit of an odd film. So that's a good amount of money. I'm glad it was somewhat successful. I mean, well, it was successful for the budget. I mean, so yeah, it was not a flop.
No, my favorite. I'm saying my favorite. One of the things I love about this film is the music.
Music's great.
The
piano over the monologue. The
music was... there's no saying composed. I mean, it's got a soundtrack and stuff. The music was by John Cale, who was a founding member of the Velvet Underground. And, yeah, I mean, it blends a lot of... 80s kind of music with some sort of lighter pieces that are like just fit the film. I think the soundtrack to this is just incredible though.
Yeah.
Why, like, also talking about, so we've got, they're at dinner, he has his monologue and his routine, then he comes to work, and then we get this kind of like weird overuse of, or like, like Walking on Sunshine's just blasting, and he's just walking into his office.
Yeah.
That's fucking strange. Like, you wouldn't expect him to be listening to that kind of music.
I'm right, yeah, that's used. Is that used after he kills some? He gets away with his first kill? No, is that Paul? I don't know, actually, I remember that's used. But yes, it's very odd. Especially where it's like dead, it's like he's listening to it with like the straightest face ever. And he's just walking. And again, I find it so crazy that a scene like that is became also a huge meme. Just that walking. Do you know how that much that's used? Do you know people have taken that? People take that walk, right? Take it out and they'll stick it in different things. Like, they'll have like memes about certain video games and stuff like that, and it's like, and have them walking into like a certain place and stuff like that to like show like, oh, this is what it's like when you play this game at this certain point and what I do. And they always use, like, I've never seen, like, this is probably one of the most like memed films I've seen. It's crazy how often it is used nowadays, man. It's crazy, man.
I don't know why it's crazy though, considering just the,
I mean,
the,
like,
character.
Things you use, it's just this one's so big, and for like years has had so many things about it, and most recently like the whole kind of Sigma thing. I mean, this really goes into the kind of legacy of the film and stuff like that.
There is an idea of Patrick Bateman.
An idea of a Patrick Bateman. Should we go on to legacy? Shouldn't we talk about
it? I mean, we can do, yeah.
I don't know as for much at the time, but I'm guessing the film was quite popular to certain people. It was known. I think it was received pretty well. Some people, of course, were upset by the violent nature. It was at Sundance, I'm correct. I think it was like January. I think it was like the same year. It went to Sundance the same year that it actually came out. It was only a few months after. I think it came out. But yeah. Overall, it was received critically, not like amazing, but it was received all right. Even now, it's not got like the best ratings you'll see. Like, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a critic score of 68%. However, the audience score is like 85%. It clearly, like, the audience liked this a lot more than I think some of the critics did. But I honestly think with time, people like this film more now than they did then. It's not been like too long since it came out. What, 23 years. So I think as time went on, especially like younger audiences seem to like it a lot, especially now, for different reasons and stuff like that. I mean, like I said, this film became like a huge kind of thing to create memes out of, and there's like a lot of reasons why, from the really quotable lines this film has to things quite recent with the whole kind of Sigma thing that went about online, the whole kind of Sigma male thing. For some reason, Patrick Bateman was the person that got originally attached. From what I remember, he was the first one that people started like showing things of when they were talking about Sigma stuff. And I think it's just because the whole Sigma thing was originally a joke. And I think Patrick Bateman was an obvious character to first go to, who's like very, very rich, looks very good, it's very attractive, and it's just like, but he's not, so it's more of a joke in itself. But I think with time, the Sigma thing kind of completely changed from being a joke to doing a thing that a lot of people actually kind of relate to. These weird Sigma characters, Patrick Bateman is not the only character that gets seen as like these kind of Sigma characters, or they also say literally me characters is what other people might say now. A lot of Ryan Gosling characters, like the driver from Drive, other ones would be like, so the driver from Drive, actually another Ryan Gosling one would be Blade Runner, Agent K, the narrator from Fight Club. Lou Bloom gets brought up a lot, it's a bit of a weird one, but he does, and Travis Bickle. And it's kind of weird, because you start wondering, like, okay, people are like making things about these, like these edits about these these characters and stuff like that, and he's saying they're literally them and stuff like that. But a lot of these characters that I just named are bad characters or villains, mainly. I mean, Patrick Bateman is a psychopath. I don't know. He's a maniac, pretty much. And like other characters like Travis Bickle and Lou Bloom as well are not good characters. They are villains. But it's not... That's the thing that's kind of weird about it. What I think people relate to these characters so much now, it's not the violent natures of these characters. I think it's the sense of the sense of these characters feel alone and don't really know what they're doing. And there's so many other things about these characters. How, like, Patrick Bateman talks about how he feels like he's simply not there and stuff like that. I think a lot of people actually relate to that kind of part of it. And it's not the actual crazy parts of the characters themselves. It's certain things, a lot of the dialogue in American Psycho is actually really good. And the way that Patrick Bateman describes, like, how he feels and stuff like that, I think a lot of people somewhat relate to it, which is kind of interesting. It's not just the fact that he's like this horrific killer and like, yeah, that's cool. It's not just that. I think there's a lot of things that play into it. I think it's the same as like people like the driver from Drive, who is a good character, but I think a lot of people relate to the fact that he's just like a kind of very quiet individual, doesn't really speak to anyone alone. So there's a lot of things. I think Louis Bloom as well is kind of the same thing. It's an interesting thing when you look about it. I know a lot of people probably look at that kind of thing, go like, that's a bit weird. I've kind of ranted on this because I know a bit about it, but it's like a lot of people probably look at it like, that's kind of weird. Why are people like making so much things about these characters that are quite bad? But there is, if you look into it, you can kind of see like why people find these characters. I think there's always, and even in bad characters, there's things people will always relate to and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting. I think it also just shows how characters can be quite good. It's quite weird for American Psycho, particularly since it is a satire, and it was not meant to be taken that way. It was more looking at kind of the yuppie culture and kind of taking a piss out of the people that were in it and making a kind of gruesome, kind of dark, very dark humor comedy. But things can get interpreted, things get looked at in different ways and stuff like that over time. I think it just shows really that it's a good character.
But yeah. I mean, I don't really know anything about this kind of online world where the Sigma personalities and all that stuff, it's more in Kenzie's kind of age demographic, I suppose. Like I said earlier, when I was watching this film, I wasn't really aware of anything like that. I mean, anytime I was watching films then, I was just going in and pressing play and just kind of immersing myself in things.
It's quite weird, especially I'm pretty sure like the directors came out about it, stuff about that, and saying that what some people were, how some people look at Patrick Bateman now is actually scary. And I do kind of see what she means, especially some of the people who actually, because not some people really do think that Patrick Bateman is this like kind of cool guy, which he's really not. But a lot of it is actually a joke in itself and stuff like that. It's just weird how things get interpreted over time. I think American Psycho is quite a weird kind of take on that. But yeah, like I said, other characters have had these kind of weird things as well, like Travis Bickle, Taxi Driver, Labeling.
There's obviously like a connection between these types of characters, and it's probably their disassociation. Yeah.
Yes. But I think from what I know, Patrick Bateman was the first one that kind of started getting big. I think that's because he originally started off as being more of a joke in itself of making, because when the whole thing, when the Sigma thing came up, it was originally kind of a meme of making fun of alpha males, but to like an extreme.
It's kind of strange. Before you went into the whole Sigma thing, you were bringing up the whole Rotten Tomatoes score. Now, yes. That is fine looking at it. It's like 60-odd% critics, 85% audience. But Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars in his review. He really liked the film.
He really liked it.
And he's like pretty much the gold standard. And Kim Newman, who is famous like film critic in this country and a famous film critic, wrote for The Empire, gave it 4 out of 5. So there obviously was people that really did like the film. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's when you... I think it's a film that's easily... can split audiences it's quite decisive. I mean, you're either going to really like this film or really hate it. I don't think there's any middle ground in all honesty with it. It's not one of these films where I think you can just put it on and put it on in the background. The book's meant to be this kind of super violent kind of take on yuppie and consumerism and that style of life. And this obviously is a satirical take on that, you know, and they did get they leaned into that persona. And that's why I think it works. I mean, Bret Easton Ellis still prefers the book over the film. Which, I mean, people have opinions. I'm not a book person. I haven't read the books. I can't say it yes or no. But it seems to be a good adaptation, nonetheless. And for all the pre-production and dispute and discourse that happened over a number of years, they finally got the right people to do it, and it all kind of worked out, which is good to see. I just wanted to say that we were talking about an R rating. Well, it's an 18 in this country, in the UK. Yes. But it's an R rated film in America, which the Americans, the MPA still fucking blow my brain, because R rating, the films that will have an R rating, if you line them up in a row, it's just crazy for me. I mean, because nobody ever gets an NC-17. But apparently this originally did get an NC-17 rating.
And they edited it?
They were forced to cut 18 seconds out of the film.
What was
it? And it's not violent. It wasn't even any of the violence. It was largely stemmed from an explicit sex scene involving Bateman and a pair of prostitutes.
So that
obviously kind of swung it over the sort of the threshold for an R rating. So they cut 18 seconds out of the film. But yeah, I suppose we have spoke at length about American Psycho. Is there anything else you would like to bring up?
I would just quickly bring up that I do think this film is rewatchable. I think a lot of people might disagree with that. I think a lot of people will agree with that. It's depends. Some people, this might be a rough film for some people to watch. Other people, quite like me, quite enjoy it. Because a lot of different things about it. Like, there's a lot of good reasons to go back to the film. Good scenes, good dialogue, things you might have missed before. It's just a very interesting film and an enjoyable film. And quite a funny film for me, to be honest. It's good. There's a lot. I think I get a lot of this out of this film.
No, I think so. I mean, it's like, what, an hour and 40 minutes. So it's a relatively short film in comparison to what we're kind of being faced with these days. It's definitely rewatchable. I think because it's got that satirical slant on it, that's what makes it rewatchable, because there is the funny elements to it.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see the joke in it. And I like the fact that it wasn't too serious. Yes, there's violence. Yes, there's all that stuff. But it is still quite funny at times. And yeah, it's... I agree. I think it's a rewatchable film. I mean, is it something that I rewatch frequently? No, but I think it's a film that super fans of it are going to watch it a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I suppose we should round out the podcast before we give our ratings and stuff, is just your take on it. Because there's so many different opinions of, is it real? Is it not real? Are they dreams? Is it reality for Patrick Bateman? Did they kill certain people? There's also the theory that Patrick Bateman's the identity of the first person he kills, and he assumes it. It's all of this shit online.
The first person he killed, isn't the first person he killed a homeless person?
No, but before the film, like, oh. In his whole murderous spree of being a serial killer.
Right. Well, my take on it, and I've spoken to quite a few people, I remember speaking to my dad a lot about this. My dad is confirmed on that that it's all in his head. But I don't think it is. Especially since I don't think, if you look by the book terms, and we know you can change terms from the book, I think in the book it's not meant to be fake. And I don't think in the film it is fake. definitely, I think some scenes might have not actually happened. Like, say, for instance, the scene where he fires a couple of shots and blows up the police car and stuff like that. And maybe that whole shooting spree that happened, maybe that didn't happen. But I think some of the other stuff did, and it's really confusing. Especially since, and one of the scenes that makes me think that it does actually happen is when he goes to check the bodies and they're not there. Which makes you think, oh, it didn't happen. But then the person who comes in to speak to him is really weird about it. And I don't know, that could just be Patrick Bateman being paranoid. There's hints at both things being the case. It's kind of quite weird. I think that he did do it, and he's not going to get caught, is what you really should be taking away from the end of the film. Not that it was on his head. I think that's kind of, I feel like, it kind of misses the point if it is on his head. That's how I feel anyway.
And yeah, I don't agree with it misses the point. I think this film is an ambiguous enough ending for you to take what you want out of it. And I'm on the fence. I don't really know. I think there's so much going on in terms of his character and his own mental state and the paranoia, and I mean, he's a very anxious and sort of he suffers with a lot of inadequacy. He doesn't feel like he's adequate at all in the whole film, and that's a mental state of his character. And then obviously you've got all this stuff added in that it could just potentially not be. And I think the choice to film things the way they did, you know, the first scene with the nightclub, which is how it's a reflection of him. There is a bit of Jekyll and Hyde about this character. And that's obviously a clear choice, because there is parts of the film where he appears normal. But as the film goes and goes and goes, he becomes more and more uncomfortable, if you know what I'm saying. Like, his character's becoming more and more paranoid, and it's becoming more and more uncomfortable, and it's just, I'm not quite sure if I believe that everything happens, or only some of it happens.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have the monologue at the end where it feels as though he's in this cycle of whatever this is, and he can't get out of it, even though he's confessed and stuff. It's like his version of hell, almost.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's quite a weird ending for the film, in all honesty. And I don't know if I like the ending of the film all that much, but it's effective, so
yes.
That's probably how it works. And
I quite like the ending.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, that is it. We have spoke enough about American Psycho. We will just move quickly on to giving it a rating out of 5 popcorn buckets. I'll go first. I've always liked this film from the first time I've seen it. Christian Bale is incredible in this film. It is easily one of his 3 best roles that he's ever had. Super iconic. And the way that he played the character works so well. I think when you get the right people involved, especially in things like adaptation, when it's not original story making, you know, this book existed for 8 years before the film came out. Or 9 years before the film came out. So yeah, that can be a hit or a miss. It can go one of 2 ways. And I think this adaptation for me, although I haven't read the book, I feel as though if I did read the book, I wouldn't dislike the film after. But who knows? Maybe if I read the book, and I'll maybe revisit that statement. But yeah, this is a 4 out of 5 for me, this film. I think there's just enough in it to give it that sort of, it's definitely an above average film, like across the board. So Yeah, a 4 out of 5 for me.
Well, I really like this film a lot. I don't know if it's quite there to be like one of my favourite films, but it is probably one of the ones I like a lot. It is probably one of my favourites, but not high up in my favourite list. Maybe, I don't know. I do like this film a lot. I think it is Christian Bale's best performance. I think the director was great with this film, and her and Bale did a great job of working together and creating this really good satire that was really enjoyable, really dark, kind of horrific at times, very unsettling at times, and actually funny at times. I honestly think it's a great film. The more I kind of see it, the more I actually really like it, and with like the dialogue as well, which is, I think, is honestly the best part of this film. It really stands out and makes it really fun to watch and quote. It's always fun talking to people. It's always fun talking about this film to anyone, really. It's just such a good film. For me, this film's easily like a 4.5 out of 5. I really like this film. I think it's great. If you haven't seen it, I actually would absolutely recommend it. It's not for everybody, though, so just know that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a 4. You're a 4.5. I mean, I can't really kind of quite get there, but I can understand why you think it's a 4.5-star film. And on another note, I think subject matter and the kind of the world that, do you know what, I've just realized a good pairing would maybe be, I watched Fight Club and then American Psycho back to back. You maybe have a fun time. They came out a year apart, and it's I think they would pair quite nicely in a nice night's worth of viewing. People out there are probably going to have a better pairing than the American Psycho, but I mean, I think
Fight Club, because they're both quite... both got Sigma characters in them.
Well, Tyler Durden.
Sigma watch party.
Don't say that out loud.
Go from American Psycho, Fight Club, Drive, Taxi Driver, Blade Runner.
No, let's not. I'm going to clip that from the podcast because I don't want to be associated with a Sigma watch party. So I suppose all we need now is sort of work out if it's a cult film or not.
I honestly think it is. And
I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, a lot of people know this film, but I actually don't know if a lot of people have actually watched this film. I know there's a certain big group of people who have and are hugely dedicated to it, big fans of the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got that type of following that I think is a really kind of culty following. Even though it is quite a known film, I think most people have heard of the film. I don't think a lot of people have. I feel there's still quite a lot of people who haven't actually watched it. I think more now, it's probably more watched now than it probably has been for a while. But I absolutely think the following that it has is definitely a cult following.
Well, definitely, it's got a cult following, yeah. I would agree, and I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, films that are 23 years old are obviously being watched more now, or they're in the sort of, in certain cultures a bit more and being watched a bit more and being shared a bit more. And I think we've always got to kind of look at the films as though they came out today. And I feel as though the people that would have went to watch this would have told their friends about it, or they would have went with like half a dozen friends because it's their type of film. And I think that's the whole idea of a cult film, is it's got this kind of unique kind of community of people who watch it and kind of flock to watch these kind of films. Because I think on the outset, if you just read what this film's about, I think there's a lot of people that might be put off by it, and there is a lot of kind of negative aspects to this film, you know, and how it views women and stuff like that, but that it's part of the book is part of the adaptation. It's part of the character. It's his character type and archetype. So yes, it has a negative portrayal of specific demographics, but it works in a way where it kind of it leans into that, and that's what makes it work. And I suppose it has a kind of shock factor as well. So yeah, I think it's easily a cult film.
Yeah.
So would you put it in your top 100?
Yes, this one would be really. I'd have this in my top 10.
Oh, there we go.
In fact, I would put it probably in the lower half of it. I think this would honestly be, for a cult film, probably one of the first that I recommend. But I know it's not for, even though it's not for everyone, I think it's one that should be checked out. I'd have it at like maybe number 4.
Fair. I would also have this in my top 10. Where would I put it? I don't give a specific number, but I would say I'll put it in my top 30 at the moment. And like you, I suppose it depends on what kind of film somebody asked me they wanted to watch, but yeah, it's definitely a film that if you're looking for these kind of culty films to watch, you know, the kind of shock and awe, this is more satirical, but it's a bit like the Man Bites Dog film. I mean, I don't think I would ever recommend that to somebody unless they went, give me a weird fucking cult film that I'm going to kind of be intrigued by. And then it'd be like, fair enough, if you're really open-minded enough to watch it, watch it. But that film's fucking strange. Whereas this one's got, it's kind of Hollywood production, I suppose. So it's kind of got that aspect. But no, as a cult film, we both highly recommend watching it. So yeah, that is it for another episode of Cult Film Cafe. And as always, if you would like to show support of the podcast, just go over and give us a wee follow wherever you listen to your podcast, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch at Cult Film Cafe. It has been a pleasure as always. So it's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Podcast out.